Morning, and welcome to episode 16 of the Restful Presents Installing to Disk. Yes, we're back with Installing to Disk. I'm Jordez, as per usual, and with me is...
James.
You don't seem happy with that.
I'm not filled with confidence for today's episode. I know that's the kind of thing you shouldn't really say, but...
When are we ever confident, but we always come up on top.
We always come up with the goods.
Yes, on this episode of the podcast, we have news about our favourite man, Cliff Bleszinski.
Cliffy B.
Cliffy B. In the rumour room we have...
A rumour.
It's always a good sign. And in the retro roundup, what have you been playing, actually? That seems to have forgotten.
We'll get on to that.
It's always one of these weeks, isn't it?
No, let's not talk about it now. Please.
Let's kick things straight off by going into the news. Our favourite man, Cliffy B, the Gears of War designer, Cliff Bleszinski, has left Epic. The studio designer, who is one of the most famous people in the industry, which is quite sad, in my opinion, he's decided to leave Epic just to go on a bit of a break. We don't know where he's going to go to in the end, but will Epic Games be the same?
Probably.
Yep, probably. I don't know why we dislike Cliff Bleszinski so much.
I know why I dislike Cliff Bleszinski. Because his Twitter, I'm on it now, it still says, it still annoys me. In his like little bio thing on Twitter, it says, might be the Tony Stark of video games.
Right, so it's arrogance we're going for.
Yeah.
Okay.
How is he similar? Tony Stark is like a billionaire robot man who goes around shooting things. Cliffy B is a game designer. Slight difference.
Slight difference indeed. Yes, so that's Cliff Bleszinski. Another thing that's been coming under fire recently, Windows 8. We reported a few weeks ago, a few podcasts ago, a long time ago, that it's getting boycotted by a lot of people. Valve complained about it, Notch of Minecraft complained about it.
Notch absolutely hates it, doesn't he?
Yes, he's actually boycotting it entirely. And this is for many reasons. One is the App Store-like thing that they're implementing, which makes it a much more closed system. The online storefront. Which now is being opened up just a little bit because you'll no longer need to use Microsoft points.
Yeah, they're going to start using actual currency, aren't they?
Yes, instead of having to buy points which you then redeem for games, you can just...
Yeah.
Which, it's good because it's a lot more transparent how much you're paying for games, or whatever they're selling on their video music as well. They've not mentioned anything for, doing the same on Xbox. Hopefully, in a bit to be more transparent, they'll bring that to Xbox as well because... It's always frustrating when you buy like 1,000 points and then the game you need is like 912.
Yeah.
So you've got 88 points you'll never use.
And just when you're in a like game or something and you see the vouchers where it's like £10 for 1,000 points, it's hard to like relate the store to
just
random numbers, isn't it?
It's a great psychological effect to get you spending more because you don't see it as real money. Microsoft points aren't real money.
It's just cartoon Star Wars money.
Yeah. We're not going to be talking about Angry Birds Star Wars if that's what you're trying to
do. I was just thinking of like when you're saying changing the currency, I just pictured the bit from Star Wars Episode 1 where like Qui-Gon Jinn's going, credits will do fine. And that flying thing's going, no, they won't. Credits will do fine. Microsoft, no, they won't.
Yes, and
installing to disk.
We talk about Star Wars with Episode 1. We're very current. And now moving on to a story that's been going on for 3 years now, and it's finally come to an end. We spoke about this before. It's No Doubt who have been basically suing Activision for using their likeness in the game Band Hero after saying that they could use their likeness in the game Band Hero. the basics of this is that No Doubt had one song in Band Hero, which we could never remember which one it was.
Just a girl?
Let's go with that. And so they said that they could use their likeness in the game for that one song, whereas Activision made them fully playable characters. So finally, in the end, it's been settled. So yeah, it's over. No Doubt. There's no doubt.
Get over it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the end of the No Doubt saga. But as always, there's doubts in the next place we're going, because we're moving on to James's Rumor Room.
Yeah, it's like usually the term rumor room like refers to a kind of collection of rumors.
Yeah,
but this week it's like singular because there's a rumor. I've actually written down two, but reading the other one through about 3 minutes ago, I concluded that it was in fact a fact.
Okay,
because it has the words will have at one point, so we can ignore that one.
It just might be a very confident rumour, in fairness.
Okay. In one of the past episodes, we mentioned that EA were scrounging around down the back of a sofa looking for coins so they could buy Valve.
And I laughed that off.
And yeah, and even Valve themselves, Gabe Newell, said that the company, if it were to be bought, would disintegrate, which, not exactly what you'd like to hear if you're a PC gamer. You know that Valve are actually bloody good.
It's not what you want to hear if you're EA. You're buying a company. It's like, well, you bought us. We're off.
Yep. And now two Korean game publishers are apparently raising the cash to have a go at purchasing Valve themselves. And these are Nexon, who we've mentioned before. Was that in possibly buying EA?
Yes, it was. We were talking about they were the ones who make the massive free-to-play karting game that's massive over in Korea. I can't remember what it's called, yep. Though.
And NCSoft are the other, and Nexon are the biggest shareholder in NCSoft. So it's essentially just Nexon. And they are apparently selling off real estate and trying to get money from shares so they can acquire Valve, but whether Valve will actively allow them to, it's not likely.
Again, I see Valve as being their own company. It's weird to consider that they could be bought out, that because they are imperious in the PC gaming world.
Yep.
They basically own digital distribution, so it's strange to consider that there are people who can buy them, but that it definitely is possible. Speaking of EA, though, there's another rumour, which you haven't picked up on, that they're trying to buy the Oddworld series.
Rumour just in, EA are apparently trying to buy the Oddworld series. Fill us in, Jordan.
This was a chap called Lorne Lanning, who was in an interview with Game Industry International, basically said that EA were looking at purchasing the Oddworld license. EA have actually refuted this. So, yes, Valve possibly to be bought out by that company that you said?
Yeah.
Entirely possible.
I think
it would crush... It would basically bring about a collapse in the gaming industry. But it's feasible.
Yeah. That was this fortnight's rumour.
So we've scrapped the factual rumour then.
I can't pronounce any of the words in it, even though it's just essentially...
Xbox Live headquarters have had the security ramped up.
Yeah, because apparently something's happening and people think that it's the next Xbox. It is like Nigel is up and running and walking about now and people don't want to see him and stuff.
Yeah. That was actually a very interesting rumour, which we could have made into something special, but... Well, speaking of messing things up, we're going to have to move to the retro roundup, because I don't know what's happened, but you don't seem too happy. But let's move straight there to the Retro Roundup. What's been happening, James?
Right. You told me to play Labyrinth, 1987. And it is based on the film, right? With David Bowie in it.
No.
Because the version I started playing was released in 1987.
In fact, no, I didn't tell you to play Labyrinth, did I?
Yes, you did.
I didn't. I said I explained it as a Labyrinth-type game.
I started playing it. It was like a point-and-click thing, but there was more words in it. It was like one of those things, you know, where it like reads stuff out.
Yeah.
What the hell am I going on about? It's like one of those text game things where it says you're standing in a room.
Oh, so you're playing like a Zork-based... Well, not a Zork-based game. A text game like Zork.
Yeah. But you used the Scum engine that you like, so I essentially did what you asked me to.
You played a different game. How is that anything like...
It's exactly the game as you... Exactly the same, but like slightly different.
No, the game that I believe I asked you to play was Shadowgate, which was released in 1987, and I explained it as a labyrinthine-type game, possibly.
So I searched for the labyrinth. Anyway, I started playing Labyrinth, and it was unplayable, because I didn't really understand how you say, go outside, pick up a book, and you're, like, elsewhere in the script. So I looked for another game to play.
In fairness, that's probably a wise idea since you were playing the wrong game in the first place. You might as well play a wrong game that you like.
Yeah, and I thought, right, who's a publisher that, you know, is respected and well known for making big blockbuster games? So I looked at Fisher-Price. And I played Fisher-Price Perfect Fit.
By the sounds of that, that's just putting square blocks in square holes.
It's more complex than that. Like in the first round, I had to match the letter G with another G, like a silhouette, and then a Q with a silhouette of a Q. And there were two people standing next to each other. And they had to go in like the silhouette associated with them. There's three objects each time. Then in the second round, there was a cassette tape, some sunglasses, and a phone thing. And the hardest, the third bit, was a rocking horse, a DJ set, and a chair. And there's only three puzzles per game bit. Once you've done then, you then get a score, which I did pretty well at, and then you get to start again. The menu music, absolutely fantastic. Old MacDonald Had a Farm, you know, one of the classics. It's up there with Stairway to Heaven. So, yeah, it was on the NES. So I was pleasantly surprised by it. I wasn't expecting a lot. Very simple, very easy to pick up. Probably meant for, you know, four-year-olds, but I enjoyed it. I had a good sing-along to Old MacDonald. So,
okay. So we started out with Shadow Gate. Then you decided to play Labyrinth instead. And
No. If you would never have described that Shadow Gate game as Labyrinth, I would never have played Labyrinth thinking I was playing the right game.
I said it involves a labyrinth.
You used the word labyrinth. I was too busy singing David Bowie to like take in what you'd said properly.
Okay, so yeah, then you ended up playing a Fisher-Price game. I don't know where you're going to take this one, but this week you're going to be playing Jet Set Willy.
Is that the one on the Spectrum?
Yes, on your favourite console, the Spectrum.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, released in 1984. It's a sequel to Manic Miner.
I've played Manic Miner. I was just thinking, I couldn't remember if I played Jet Set Willy or not, but I've definitely played Manic Miner.
Yeah, I was the other way around. I've played Jet Set Willy, but not played Manic Miner. So I was going to tell you to play Manic Miner, but Jet Set Willy it is. Yeah, released in the 1984. It was on the Spectrum, But since it was in 84, it was released on everything. Like, just everything. Like, BBC Micro, Micro, Acorn, Electron, Commodore 64, everything. It's probably one of the most well-known games on the Spectrum, I would say.
Just to clear up, I'm going to give Fisher-Price a thumbs up for simplicity. Go on, as you were.
What about Labyrinth?
Oh, thumbs down. Unplayable.
You really went from two ends of the spectrum there, didn't you? From a text-based game to a children's game.
That was the first time I've ever played or tried to play a text-based game.
Oh, well, next week you'll be playing Zork.
And you said either end of the spectrum. Let's go back to Jesse Willy on the spectrum.
Yes, so 1984, you're going to be playing... Jet Set Willy. I don't really have much more to say on that, to be honest.
Is Jet Set Willy in any way similar to Jet Set Radio?
No, apart from that it's got some badass music. I know Jet Set Willy, definitely on the Spectrum version, I'm not sure on the others, but it had a Moonlight Sonata, you know, Beethoven.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Jet Set Radio had Funky Dealer by Hideo... I'm sorry, I can't remember his correct last name, but... So for Jet Set Radio Future and Funky Dealer, and that is some damn fine music.
Okay.
So yes, that was the retro roundup. Hopefully next podcast we'll have a more coherent version of it. But it's just one of those days today, so apologies to anyone listening. So yes, let's move on to... Games of the Week. I've been playing Hell Yeah, Wrath of the Dead Rabbit. This is a recently released 2D game. It's released on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, I believe. I've been playing it on PlayStation because it was free on PlayStation Plus, pretty simply. You could tell it was going to be full of like all the pop cultural references and little hints towards other video games when the Sega screen came up. And it actually went... Sega! Like it used to do back in the old day, in the classic days of Sonic. I was trying to think of it earlier. I would describe it as a mix between Super Meat Boy, Castlevania, WarioWare, and Acid. Because it's absolutely insane. It's a lot more style over actual... content, I would say. Like when you defeat one of the bosses, it comes up with like a mini game. So instead of like your classic quick time events, it's more, well, it is a quick time event, but it's been framed as. Did you ever play WarioWare? It's just a compilation of mini games.
So it comes up,
Yeah, it comes up with like something like that. So 1 second you might be like trying to get. An arrow within like the green area when it's like going back and forth, and the other ones might just be like smashing X, and they all have like really quirky death scenes. So it's an interesting game, and it's one that is definitely worth looking at.
One thing I was going to bring up with you mentioning it is I went to Eurogamer. Whenever it was, last week, I can't remember when it was. There was a stand for Hell Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching briefly whilst killing time waiting for the tube. And there was one bit where someone was playing and then it stopped and there was like a quiz appeared.
That was one of the mini games.
And just my view of that is it might not help that I only watched it for 2 or 3 minutes, but it didn't seem to flow that well.
Because
there was constantly a quiz coming up, and the answer was always something like over 9,000, used in some like really ironic way, and it didn't really seem to, just from that glimpse I had, how would you...
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, at first, these little mini-games are like quite fun, and you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. But they... do disrupt any sense of like rhythm in the game, and once you, because they do repeat themselves a lot, so it's like this again. It's like, But yeah, that just brings it on to another point. It seems to try too much. I mean, it throws everything at you. It seems to think that you've got, like, severe attention problems. So, like, it changes up every, like, 10 seconds. And a lot of the time you're like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? So, yeah, I mean, it's worth a look because it is nice to see something trying something different. I wouldn't say it succeeds too well. But if you've got a PlayStation Plus membership, then there's no reason not to get it because it's free at the moment. I believe it's a tenner on like Steam and Xbox Live. So if you've got nothing to do, then
go for it.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's not one that you want to go out of your way for. It is just a little aside. So yeah, that was Hell Yeah, Wrath of the Dead Rabbit. And that's the only game I've been playing recently.
Okay.
How about yourself?
Right, well, I've been playing Formula One 2012. I last played 2010. I missed 2011. But yeah, it seems to have, you know, Co-Masters, they in their racing games, they went through very obvious stages, didn't they, with the menu layouts?
Yeah.
And so there was a stage where they were, it was more putting you in the context of being a racing driver. You, in dirt, you were inside your motorhome. In mm-hmm. F1, you had the motorhome as well. You could walk around outside to an extent, just switching between menus. And then it's gone more abstract again recently, hasn't it? Like, dirt is some kind of Mayan temple with pyramids everywhere, like all random stuff going on.
Yeah.
And now this F1 game is in... It's a lot more abstract, just the kind of layout and way you go through it.
Would you say you prefer that? Because I played the Dirt, like, 2 and 3, as well as Dirt Showdown, and I felt like while the menus that we like in your motorhome, I mean, they did offer you more immersion, but they just took too long. It's quite simple. I just want to be able to go through the menus, just put this, boom, I'm in the race. And that's what Dirt Showdown did so well. Shame about the races, but...
I'm not sure about that. Because, I mean, I understand, like, you know, it being clear and just racing.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, I watched developer diaries about 2012 and them saying how there's more of an emphasis on you as a driver.
Mm-hmm.
So there's now like a kind of in-game email system. So you're receiving these fictional emails from the team. But they are actually quite useful in that it shows like proper race data, which is useful for you to see. But it just kind of puts more of a context to it by saying from... you know, Frank Williams, the head of the team.
Yeah.
So they've kind of built up that bit. And you've got these animated scenes as you of your driver winning and all the drivers congratulating him. But then they've taken out the kind of press area. Because like in F1 2010, there was, if you did well in a race, there was an interview bit afterwards and you'd have questions to choose, like answers to choose from. Yeah. And I just think it's a bit strange that they've said that they've built upon this feeling of you being a driver, but then at the same time kind of removed these. But I do think it feels more of, it does feel more like you're a driver working your way through the ranks as opposed to someone playing a racing game. Because now there's a young driver test where you have to do these various tests to, it's just basically learning the game, but they, it just feels like you're properly learning how to do it before going into the career.
That reminds me of Gran Turismo 3. I mean, with the licenses that you had to get before, they were essentially training exercises, but they were framed as such.
But I mean, F1 2012. Whilst, I mean, the career does feel a lot better now with how you're not necessarily, you've got your 1 and 2 driver. You're not necessarily going to stay the number 2 driver all the way through the season as long as you're doing consistently well and other teams take more of an interest in you. I think it's easier to drive more consistently than it was in 2010. I can't really comment on 2011. if that's like a sudden change in this one, or if it's a gradual thing. But an area that I haven't had chance to do yet, and I'll try to before the next podcast, is there's now these kind of situational challenge things. So I want to know if this mode in F1 is going to feel like it's adding something, or whether it's just going to feel completely... I'd really like to see an F1 game with more history behind it, rather than just this year. I'd like to be able to play as Senna racing against Prost in like early 90s. I like...
You might be able to do that in Formula 1 go-karts, or whatever they're calling it.
Yes, which I've played.
Have you? Any good?
James's Eurogamer recap. I'll keep it short and sweet because we're going on a bit now. Quickly, what games did I play that were good? F1 Race Stars, I really like it. It very approachable, and well, if you were to ask me what is the best racing game, I'd pick Gran Turismo and Forza over Mario Kart any day.
I would pick Crashing Racing. I would pick Burnout 3 Takedown first, then Crashing Racing.
But a lot of people, you just say, for pure fun, just say Mario Kart. And so I've never really enjoyed it. But then, like, this F1, I found it a lot easier to get into. Like, there was more, I had more of a connection with it because these were teams and characters that I know already, and I felt like I could get into it. I really liked it. The tracks are really nicely designed. They have the feel of their real-world locations, but far more cartoony and over the top. Hockenheim in Germany, you're not on Hockenheim, you're in the Black Forest and going through castles, and so it's that location, but not so much that track. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's one I'm looking forward to, because kart race, I'm pretty much an expert on kart racing games, I would like to say. And there aren't many that are released that are good. I mean, Modern Nation Races was a notable example recently. But normally you get like proper, really tacky spin-offs like Chocobo Racing, which is off the Final Fantasy series. But yeah, this one and Little Big Planet Karting, which comes out in a month, are two that I'm looking forward to.
Grid 2, I like that as well. Felt very nice and solid and looked great, sounded great. It was on PC, I played it. And the fellow that was standing around from Codemasters said that, you know, this is what it would look like if it was on a next generation console. We didn't wink, I've just added that. But yeah, it looked good. I didn't actually play the first grid.
It was a good game. I'm surprised that they haven't pushed that series as much as they have, considering that Dirt has got now 4 games and Grid is only moving on to his second now.
Yep, so that was good. Assassin's Creed 3, I played on the Sea Battle mode. The sound effects for the Sea Battle mode were amazing. Mm. Just all these cannons going off and all these screams and the waves going. But I don't know whether it was just me kind of not getting into it properly in the time, but it went on a bit.
Well, naval battles have never been known for being high octane. You just go past, fire your cannons, turn around, go past, fire your cannons.
Yeah.
Unless it might be more fun when there's like a billion boats around you, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. I've not played the game myself, so I can't comment on this particularly. But
I had a go on a Wii U, and the controller felt very nice. It felt a lot more comfortable than I was anticipating, because it's essentially a slab. But it did feel very nice, very light. The games looked... I didn't play on anything with the tablet so much, but they didn't look all too different from current generation stuff graphically. But it, you know, it felt nice. I'm still don't really care.
There's more reason not to care, because Rayman has been delayed, so it's going to be coming out in 2013. It's not going to be the release date of November the 30th that was predicted. So, yeah. That £350 price tag for the Zombie U version is looking a bit expensive.
Yeah. And finally, my highlight of the show was Hotline Miami.
Oh, you played it?
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. I love it. It's brilliant style. The soundtrack is fantastic. and
it's very 80s.
Yes, very, very, very 80s. And something that I didn't realise until I played it is that it's all top down. You're going into these buildings and taking out all these gangsters, but you have to like cleanly do it in one sweep. So if you go in the building, kill four gangsters, and then a gangster runs in and shoots you, that's it. You're dead. One bullet, you're down. They start again, and it took me about 20 attempts to try and get like, even halfway through this level. I never completed it the whole time I was there. But absolutely brilliant, just planning it all out and picking stuff up and beating people up, and yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I got to play a Rezzed a few months ago. I don't know
awesome, if it'll innit?
Progress from then. But and it's really addictive.
That was good. And if you want to read any more about Eurogamer, just read Chris's posts, because like the difference between me and him is that he, probably like you, Jordan, actually have an interest in game journalism, whereas I don't give a rat's arse, so I'm just like struggling to remember stuff now. So just read what everyone else has said.
Yes, and you can go look at Chris's reviews on Eurogamer over at thereticule.com. As well as that, Kevin's been going around the people getting their views on the next generation, and my views are in there as well, apparently. Which I hadn't noticed until now. So, if you want to hear...
You are actively involved with this website, aren't you?
Yes, but I do the podcast. Yes, so we get to see what myself and a lot of other people think may happen in the next generation. As well as video game reviews, news and rumours as per usual. So, go check that out. And that just about wraps up for this episode of the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to say, James? Any last words?
Oh, yeah, I'd recommend Radiohead. I saw them at the weekend. They're very good. Got to see Tom York's eye in real life.
And I will go with, as per usual, goodbye. Goodbye.